everyone, and welcome to Those Working Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine.
And today we're hosting the second annual Polis Bananas Oscars. We're talking our best movies of 2023, and we got to get that in before the actual Oscars, which is actually on my birthday weekend, just so you all should know that. And next week we'll be doing our worst movies of 2023. Okay.
Very exciting.
I have more on that list, honestly.
And on top of that, Taylor Swift, just last night as we're recording this, dropped huge news at the Grammys. She is releasing a new, entirely new fucking album, April 19th, called The Tortured Poets Department. The Tortured Poets Department. It's her longest album title to date.
So it's TTPD.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about that as well. We have to dig in. I love our Fangirl Oscars episode so much. So I'm excited. Before we roll into that, let's just move right into our Snap Crackle Pop Culture news.
Yeah.
The Grammys aired last night, and I think it was one of the most exciting Grammys we've had in years. Mm-hmm. You agree?
I don't love most of the Grammys. I'm only there for like my girlies. But I really enjoyed it. I couldn't get over what legend she sang. She was 87 years old. Why am I blanking on her name?
Joni Mitchell.
That moved me. That performance like moved me. But also my favorite thing was Miley Cyrus. Like, oh my God.
Loved Miley last night. She won her first Grammy and then she performed Flowers and she like talked through the performance and it was so fun. I loved it.
I loved how like, she's like, come on, don't act like you like
don't know this song.
And then it cuts to Taylor like fully singing every lyric.
Yeah, it was great. It was just so joyous. And she told this little story about how she's worked really hard on trying not to put all of her worth in awards and numbers and all that stuff that comes with like society as we know it today. And she talked about how a little boy with a butterfly net like tried so hard to catch a butterfly, and then he finally stopped trying so hard and just sat down, and then a butterfly landed on his nose, and this song was like her butterfly. Like, she had no expectations and just had a great time making it. And she won two Grammys last night for Flowers. It was beautiful. And Trevor Noah killed it as a host last night.
Oh, yeah. He's
so good. I love Trevor Noah. He's fantastic. So Taylor was nominated for Best Pop Record last night for Midnights. And she won. And I was freaking out because I thought that she'd probably win Album of the Year and that they probably wouldn't give her any of the other awards that she was nominated for, because that's a huge win. Mm-hmm. And she gets up there. She's like, this is my 13th Grammy, which is fucking wild. Okay.
Yeah.
It's also going to be like her 13th game when she goes to the Super Bowl. Like, 13
it's
is popping
weird.
Up. Everywhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, while we were off, you guys, the Chiefs won their playoffs game and are now officially going to the Super Bowl. There's been all this like, is Taylor gonna make it from Tokyo to the Super Bowl on time? And Tokyo, Japan, put out an official statement.
I thought that was like, fake.
No. It was real, I think. Everyone was talking about it. It was like they put out an official statement being like, she can comfortably make it from the concert to the Super Bowl. Please calm down. Anyway, back to this. She gets up there. She says she's going to share a secret that she's had for 2 years with her fans. And it's that she has a brand new album coming out April 19th, which is just months away, barely months away. Okay.
I know.
That's before. That's before my book comes out. It's before Olivia gets married. It's before anything. And her new album's called The Tortured Poets Department, April 19th. We all died. Natasha, thoughts?
Two years ago was Midnight's release. Like, when was she working on Midnight's? How is this lining up with everything?
I can tell you.
Okay. Tell me. I have more questions.
Go ahead.
So there's a question. One, why is she releasing it in the middle of the Eras tour? Everyone's like, is it going to become an era? No, I don't think it's going to become like an era on the tour, right? You don't think so?
Like, you never know. She could change up the tour whenever she wants. She could have plans to add another section. We have no idea.
Because she's touring until the end of this year, right?
She's touring until the end of the year. So the show can change. A lot of times artists want to change it up because it's been going for so long. They need to mix it up to stay excited and keep everyone else excited. Mm. Okay. But this is the thing. So like I've said a million times, Folklore started the breakup tour of her and Joe. They didn't break up, but something bad happened in their relationship where they almost broke up and they wrote their way back together. Like, the story is all in Folklore and Evermore. Like, they already were going through so much shit. Now, Midnight's, then she wrote that after Evermore, because Evermore is very reflective. It's going back on like all of her other relationships, thinking about like her part in whatever broke them up, you know, and taking responsibility for her part in it, but also acknowledging that like a lot of her partners were douchebags. And after that, I think is when Midnight's came, because she was like doing all her re-records, really being reflective. And she obviously was still having issues with Joe, but she could not release an album about that. Now they're broken up. They've been out for a year. She's been perfecting this album and it's time. And the cover is giving Folklore Evermore, because it is the Folklore Evermore part three you all wanted. This is it. And I am so fucking excited.
So, yeah, as soon as she said the Dead Poets Department, I was like, okay, this is giving The Lakes. This is giving, like, when she talks about, like, all the people who wrote away on their little journals at the lakes.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yep. And, like, immediately with the black and white, it's like, this is giving that era. This is giving those songs. Those songs were all about Joe and her. They wrote them together. They're about the trouble that they're going through in their relationship and how they were making through it and, like, the Great War and all that stuff. Nicole said, did you hear about the Tortured Man Club? Yes. So this is another thing. So she's referencing, with the title, it seems, this group chat that Joe, her ex-boyfriend, was a part of with, like, the guy who plays Moriarty, Andrew Scott, and another guy, another actor, where they, like, talk together on WhatsApp, and it was called the Tortured Man's Club. And it was clearly, like, going on while they were together, and this feels like a direct blow to that name.
So someone in our chat just said that interview was posted on April 19th, 2022.
Yeah.
And then her album comes out April 19th.
Oh, shit.
You're like, yeah. And I'm like, wait.
I thought you were referring to the year. I was like, yeah, it lines up.
Paul Mescal.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is hilarious. I'm just so excited. This is what I've been waiting for. Everyone's saying that Midnight's was the breakup album. I'm like, no, you're not listening to Midnight's right. Like, she was still in love when she wrote Midnight's. Antihero is the fear that they're going to break up because of her. And it happened, but not necessarily because of her, but, you know, they all play a part in whatever happens here.
So someone asked us, do you have thoughts on the genre? And I don't know if, like, our part three of Folklore answered that, but
I feel like it's gonna have those vibes. I know it's listed under, like, pop synth or something. on Apple, but that doesn't really hold anything because Midnight's was listed as like rock and stuff. Like you never know. It doesn't really hold ground on what it's actually going to sound like. The vibes are, I saw someone saying this on Twitter too. The vibes are slutty folklore.
Yes. Wait, I love that.
The vibes are bearing it all instead of shrouding it in a mystery of trees and telling you guys it's about fake people. Those are the vibes.
It's not about fake people this time.
You know what it's about. Let me point to the interview.
Okay. But we actually haven't talked about how literally everyone and their brother thought it was going to be she was going to be announcing Rep re-release at the Grammys.
I mean, I don't know if you remember when we were talking about what we were expecting for next year, but I said a new Taylor Swift album.
Yes. Well, you also said that
February 8th. Or are you going to say February 8th Reputation? Because that's what I said, I think.
No, you said that she would be re-releasing all of her albums before she started her new era. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think she...
No.
Like everyone pointed out that there's the new album, the two new releases, new album, two new releases, new album, and then it would be like Reputation and debut.
I mean, clearly she's had this date planned for a while, and that's why this is pushing everything. And she was like, while we were all like, we're ready for Rep, she was like, la 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 la.
We're clowns in this. She always does, aside from everyone predicting that when 1989 was going to drop, she does typically surprise us and do the unexpected. And I love being surprised this way. I love new music. I mean, the re-releases are super fun, but like the new music is even better, in my opinion.
I like that she now has the option to like add this to the tour, because that was like the in our heads kind of what was blocking the ability to release new music, because she was still on tour for another year with the Eras and she hadn't released these last two. I mean, do we think that she's going to release them before the end of the year? Maybe. Like, I don't know. I think at least one, maybe, will come out before the end of the year.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Rep or debut.
So after Midnight's, what came out after Midnight's?
I mean, it's Speak Now.
Speak Now. But that was...
But it was like 6 months later. Yeah. It was July and Midnight's was October. Mm-hmm. So it was more than 6 months. It was like 9 months later.
And then 2 months after that, it was 1989.
Yes. Yes. But... I mean, it's not necessarily a pattern. She's going to do what, like, the dates feel significant for her. So, true.
Katie says, Folklore Evermore was like Bronte Dickens classic era literature, but this new album is giving Sylvia Plath Bloomsbury Group era. I like that.
All her songs are very poetic, but you could feel the poetry in Folklore and Evermore. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this will be like that as well. I'm just so excited. I'm just so thrilled. I was just so proud when she won Album of the Year, making history, the first person to win Album of the Year at the Grammys four times. Never been done before, except by Miss Taylor Swift now, which is so cool. It's so cool. I'm just so excited.
Can we talk about everyone's reactions in the room after she announced it?
I mean, what do you want to talk about there?
I feel like as we were all freaking out at home and then they cut to people in the audience, it just like, I could hear people within the audience who were big fans of her like screaming, but it cut to the stars and they're all like,
because it's not the same with her, like, peers.
No, I know that. I'm just like, this is weird. Like, not the room, but, like, everyone's excited watching the Grammys, so it's fine.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't matter.
It's weird. It was weird.
Yeah, I saw, like, a clip of Miley just being like... It's because, again, these are not the passionate fans sitting in the I mean, like, they might be fans of her music, but they're not like fans like we're fans screaming at home. Yeah, Ed Sheeran, there's a clip of him saying, like,
she told me.
Like, bullshit, she knew this was gonna happen and she was expecting this in terms of like winning album of the year.
The other controversy that happened at the Grammys was Celine Dion.
Yeah.
And like, a lot of my friends were up in arms when I recorded myself and her winning album of the year. My first thought was like, wait, hug Celine. And she was just so like,
she was like so excited, flustered. And in shock. Yeah. And flustered. Mm-hmm. Like, that it's really hard to process all of that at once. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very fine that she probably apologized afterward. I don't know if you all saw the picture of her hugging Celine Dion, mm-hmm. All over Twitter this morning, but like, she clearly talked to her afterward, mm-hmm. and it was fine. But everyone wants to find something to fault Taylor Swift about because she's so high on the mountain right now. It's like, anything we can use to pull her down, let's do it. There was so much like, how dare you, mm-hmm. not hug Celine? But she was clearly like in a daze. Like, she just made Grammy history.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. And she was like looking all over for her people too.
Yeah.
And she like and pulled Lana up on stage.
Yeah.
I was like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if she was expecting to win, it's not the same as like the actual moment when it happens. Like, is insane. This is huge. It, like, and she was just trying to take it in, I think, with the people that got her there. So she was like looking for them specifically. Yeah, I saw a lot of people talking about how Celine, you know, has been having health issues, and she also might have not known if she was allowed to like hug her in the moment, or if that was something that she wasn't supposed to do.
Celine has stiff person syndrome, and I don't know if anyone was advised like not to hug her, or because she's very ill at this point, so. Might have been advised not to. I don't know.
Yeah. Or she might have just not known if she should.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're so excited.
So excited. I love Taylor, and I love the green dress that she wore at the Golden Globes, and this white dress was giving, and I liked the gloves and the jewelry. I despise the hair. I'm sorry. Like, she's gorgeous. Like, I could, it's fine. It's whatever. I'm like, oh, she's, her hair is probably braided because it's weaving all these secrets in it. But I did not like the hair. And I want to see her do something. Like, I wish she had done like a high pony or something with the dress. Like, the vibes of the hair didn't match the vibes of the dress. And I wish she had done something like slick back or I don't know. It was,
I feel like the braids are giving Evermore folklore, and maybe she wanted to weave those in.
I know. It didn't work.
But Evermore folklore is also like such messy hair, and maybe she was also trying. I know it didn't work with the outfit, but maybe she was more concentrating on like, you know, Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Hair Easter eggs.
Okay, well, everyone in the chat is saying that they didn't like her hair. So
I'm not saying that like I loved her hair. I'm just saying like I feel like she was like, I need hair Easter eggs.
Yes. Someone was saying on TikTok, they're like, oh, I wish Taylor would show up in like 30 inch extensions and just do like some straight, like blunt, you know, she loves her bangs, but like some long hair. I don't know. I just want to see her have more fun with her hair. I don't know. Cheyenne loves it. Okay, so you loved her hair. Well,
I feel like she always goes for a more like natural look with her hair.
Yeah, but when you're going to an award, you're right. I know. I didn't love the hair, but I love the whole look outside of the hair. And that's my final thought.
I don't care about her hair. I was just so excited about like her speech and her wins. And I am thrilled when she said she was going to post the album cover. I was like, ah!
we have a we both were recording ourselves in that moment, and mm-hmm. there's a combined reaction video on the Four King Fangirls Instagram. If you're not following us there yet, you should be following us at those Four King Fangirls on Instagram for fun stuff over there. Our socials are run by Chloe Laverson, and she does a kick-ass job, and that video is up if you want to watch it. Yes. If you haven't seen it yet. Oh my god. All right, let's move on. We have a couple other news items.
I'm sorry, I'm reading the I have to bring up my reaction because I was just filming my face, and when I looked back at it, when she said new album, I was like, what? I looked like Brittany Broski drinking the what's that like sourdough drink? What is it called with like
kombucha?
Kombucha. Did I not look like Brittany Broski?
I don't know who that is. And
what? You don't know who Brittany Broski is? I have
no idea what you're referencing. No.
Laura said Christine sounded like Jennifer Lawrence on Hot Ones. What do you mean? What do you mean?
It was just like, it was just insane. And I was just filming it because I was so excited that she won, and I thought maybe she'd announce rap like all of us. Okay.
Sorry.
Let's move on. Yeah. Okay. Season 2 of Severance is officially in production. I'm very excited. If you haven't watched Severance on Apple, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time now since season 1 dropped.
Yep.
And I feel like, did it drop before the pandemic? I can't even remember.
No,
now.
It dropped like 2021.
I don't know. It's all blurring together. Anyway, it dropped a long time ago. But season 2 is finally in production, and I am pumped. What have you got for us?
Bridgerton season 3 teaser clip, which I filmed my reaction to. That's also on those Forking Fangirls Instagram. That dropped. The full trailer comes out on Valentine's Day. I'm so excited. It was the first time we saw a clip from the show. We've only been seeing pictures. So, and it was Colin and Penelope, and it was a very cute scene. I just want the whole thing now.
I haven't seen the trailer because I kind of wanted to like just not be spoiled now, but maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it. But that's the only trailer I'm gonna watch. I'm not gonna watch anything else from it. And I've decided I think I'm going to do a Penelope cosplay, and I'm excited for that. She's got so many like blue dresses, and I haven't like made a true Regency gown
dress.
Yeah, I'm gonna get a nice red wig and do the little curls that she has.
Nice. And the last thing on the news talk is that it's 3 months till my book comes out now. Attached at the Hip, my new novel, comes out May 21st. And woo, I brought an ARC with me to my sister's bachelorette this weekend because we were going to be at a beach. And I was like, oh, I never go to the beach. I should take some pictures. Took 0 pictures with the ARC. It was just way too chaotic, but I did give it to my cousin who hasn't read it yet, and she is going to read it, and I'm so excited to hear her thoughts because I always like get like text threads of all her thoughts as she reads my books, and it's so much fun for me. But yeah, so Attached at the Hip, my new adventure survivor spinoff rom-com is coming out so soon, and it's available for pre-order in any form. So like you could pre-order the hard copy, you could pre-order it for your Kindle or for your digital ebook, you could pre-order the audiobook, like all of that really helps me, any type of pre-order. And you can add it to your TBR on Goodreads, you can request it at your local library, all of that.
The app.
Yes, on the Libby app you could do it. I'm so excited. More people are reading the ARCs and like tagging me in like reviews.
Really?
They've been tagging me in reviews on like their Instagrams and stuff, and it's been so cool. One reader, like she was messaging me, like she was so excited, and then she read it all again the day after because she was in a book of mourning period. Yeah, And she's like, I am obsessed. I loved it so much. And it was just so fun to hear like her thoughts and reactions. And she made like a little reel where it was like, if you like these vibes, then you're going to love this. Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And someone else tagged me in like, oh, they had like made a big quote from the review and it was like her best work yet. It was just, it's been really nice seeing those reactions. Anyway, out May 21st, the link to pre-order is in the show notes. Yeah. We are going to roll into what right now? I have been devouring House of Flame and Shadow. I can't say anything about it, but it's so exciting.
How many chapters Go ahead. Are you in?
I'm on chapter 21
no!
right now.
Stop yeah. reading so fast.
I'm not reading that fast. I literally had to stop the whole time I was in Miami.
How did you get through it so quickly?
I can't stop reading, Natasha. You have to read it okay. so you can start recording our chapter chat.
I started. Okay. I got through the prologue and chapter one this morning.
Okay.
And last night.
I am taking notes so that like I know what happened in each chapter.
I stopped because this morning I started taking notes. I was like, oh fuck. I have to like I'm not good about remembering what happens in books. In fact, what stopped me, what I was scared about starting it is I couldn't remember anything that happened in the second one. Like the end besides like, you know, what happened.
You can remember as you go though. Like it's not a big deal. Just keep reading.
But I forgot who the Hind was. I was like, who the fuck is this? And then
That's Lydia.
I know that. Now I had to literally go in and Google all of the characters just so that I could be reminded.
You could watch my book talk.
Well, that was my second thing I was going to do, but I was like quickly okay. trying to like, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, just put it on like 1.5. Let it roll in the background.
Okay, well, now I remember everything that happens at the end. So I think I'm okay now. But I've been writing everything down and writing all of the characters' names down so that I know. Because
the one person I couldn't remember was like the Harpy. I have to go watch my book talk.
I couldn't remember the Harpy either.
Yeah, I know it was like bad, but like I think conflating the Harpy and the Hind because they had both H names. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, but they're all a part of like that
group. The bad guy crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was very confusing. Yeah. But Sarah is doing press and book touring. Like we haven't seen her out and about in a really long time, I feel like, because the pandemic, of course, was when her other last three books released, basically. Mm-hmm. Crescent City was right before the pandemic. And then Silver Flames, I think, was during the pandemic.
I think it was.
And also House of Sky and Breath was toward the end of the pandemic. There were still no tours. Mm-hmm. So, she looks great. She is so excited at these events. Mm-hmm. It's been so fun to watch all the videos on TikTok.
It was very fun. I was on TikTok at 11 p.m. on Monday evening and I saw her surprising people and I was like, I'm like, oh my God, wait, the book comes out tonight. And I quickly Googled. I'm like, is there a midnight release screening or like screening midnight release near me? And there was. And I coerced Taya to come with me. And it was so fun. Like it felt like as soon as we made the decision that we were going, we're like, okay, get our stuff. Let's get our shoes on. Let's go. And, we like drove to the nearest bookstore. It's only like 15 minutes away. And we got in as like 5 minutes till midnight. And there were so many people in the bookstore. There was like 200 people waiting for the book.
Wild.
You had to have pre-ordered it. And so I was just going there on a prayer and a whim and hoping that I was going to be able to get a book. Luckily, I knew someone who worked there. And then another girl recognized me and she's like, I'll save two for you. And I'm like, thank you. but I was at the very end of the line and I waited the whole night until like, I think we got out of there at like 1 a.m. Cause it took a long time for everyone to get through and purchase their books, but it was so exciting. And I haven't done that in such a long time. I think I did the Twilight DVD release, like maybe Breaking Dawn part one or two. That was the last like midnight thing I think I've done. Cause I don't think they did anything for Cassie's
book. I've never
book.
Done it. I've never done it before.
Really?
Yeah. And that night I was packing for this fucking bachelorette, and dealing with a lot of bachelorette drama. Yeah. And
which we'll
it
talk
was
about in tea time.
Tea time. So I did download the physical, not physical, the ebook at midnight. Mm. And then I wanted the audiobook because I was packing. I was like, this audiobook's gonna get me through this. I need to start listening to it. I need it now. And I couldn't download it. It was like pre-order. And I was like, it's out, bitch. Let me download it. I sat there refreshing literally for 10 minutes. And then it was like, oh, okay, you can buy it. And I bought it and it wouldn't download. It was like, it'll download when it's ready. And another 10 minutes went by where I was just sitting there like fuming. Like, I paid for this. And it finally downloaded and I was able to listen to it on the walk with Bellamy. I've been listening to it ever since. I did not sleep on my overnight flight to New Jersey except until like for like an hour because I was listening to the fucking book and I did not want to stop. Gosh. And then I was reading with my eyeballs. And I was like, okay, you have to stop listening to this or you will not sleep. So I turned it off and put like a Billie Eilish album on and finally slept for like an hour and a half. And then we were like descending and it was like, back to the book. So it was a fun time and I'm so glad to be able to listen some more now. At one point on the way to Florida, I was listening to it too. And I fell asleep like toward the end of the flight and I woke up and if something else was happening in the book, I was like,
oh my gosh, that has happened to me too many times. I'm like, no, turn it off.
Oh my God. So it's been so much fun. I'm having the best time. Yeah. When you finished Hurricane Wars, I heard.
I finally finished Hurricane Wars. And honestly, I'm a bit disappointed by it. I was telling people this is my favorite fan fiction. And when I finally got to the end of it, she pretty much what she did was she elongated the beginning of the fan fiction because she has to create and start this entirely new world. Yeah. And this first book is like maybe a quarter of the fan fiction. So like all the really great stuff that I read isn't even in this first novel. And it's way too short, honestly. Like the ending, it feels very unfinished. If you think of a really great fantasy novel, I mean, if we think about one of Cassie's books or like one of Sarah's books, like there's so many twists and turns and fun ways that you can take a novel. And I feel like this really could have benefited from being longer and having more of a leg to stand on because I don't know. I just like, it was good and I enjoyed it. And like, she writes really great sex scenes and I love that. But like the plot of it, you don't really get a handle on it. And I'm kind of disappointed. And I'm like, I'm going to be reading the other books, but I wish it was longer and I'm scared to tell people to read it because it feels very unfinished. Like, I feel like I'm going to tell people to wait until the whole series is out.
The second book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's a downer.
I know. Well, it's just, I'm like, it's so different from the fan fiction because you're basically coming into a world that you already know and you don't really have to work on all that world building. You kind of just, and like, you already know the characters, like the characters already had like two movies, I think, cause it ends after The Last Jedi. And like, she kind of had to go back and like rework like how they knew each other and all that. And anyways, okay, moving on.
All right. I guess we can quickly talk about the movies we watched this week, even though we're about to just talk about movies. Yeah. I finished Iron Claw because the last time I talked about it, I hadn't finished it and it was really good, but it's really sad. It has a little like happy epilogue scene ish. And I'm glad I watched that because I got to like the point where I had like 5 minutes left and I was like, I can't watch it. I'm afraid something terrible is going to happen in the last 5 minutes.
Oh no.
But it does have like a happy, like little uptick at the end, which is nice. Mm. So it was really, really good. And if you are in a place where you can handle like a lot of sadness, then definitely watch it.
Not me right now.
Don't watch it, Natasha.
No.
Don't watch it.
Okay. I watched The Holdovers. It's streaming on Peacock right now.
I need to watch that.
And yes, it's nominated. It's with the one with Paul Giamatti. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. It's set in the 70s. It's about a boarding school and how these kids have to stay back during the Christmas vacation. And Paul and the actress who won the
Divine Joy.
Yeah, Divine Joy. Are staying back and like looking after them. And it's very tender-hearted. There's a lot of like lessons learned, a lot of great character growth within these characters, and Divine Joy is fantastic in it. She deserves whatever award that she gets, and I mean, yeah, it was really great. So I implore you guys all to give it a shot and watch it.
I'm going to tell my neighbors and we're going to have another movie night and watch The Holdovers.
Yeah, we watched it with Dakota and Kirsten. That was fun.
All right. Well, that is going to bring us to our main discussion, the Fangirl Oscars. Yes! 2024? Or do we say 2023? Yes. The best movies of 2023 and all our superlatives. Before we jump into that, though, I want to take a second. Thank everybody out there listening. We appreciate you so much. If you don't know, we are a viewer-supported show. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/thoseworkingfangirls, where we have lots of fun perks. We've got 3 different tiers. Our $5 tier is called Team Jacob. And with that, you get our extra half an hour show every single week attached to the main show. And we talk about what's going on in our lives, some deeper topics, some more personal things. It's really fun. And we love our community there. And right now we're offering a free trial for Team Jacob. So you can get 7 days for free, test it out, see if you like it. And you get to come to our recordings, talk in the chat, which is a blast. Mm-hmm. Like you get to be part of the conversation as we're recording. We just have so much fun with everyone in the chat. And you can also do the annual subscription option, which allows you to save like 16%, which is like a month and a half in the long run if you want to subscribe for the year instead of month to month. And we have our Team Pulse. We have 2 other tiers that have lots of other fun perks, including like getting to be a guest on the show. We bring on a listener every month, or like we have a bonus episode every month for Team Edward, and it's super fun. Other announcements, Chapter Chat is up and running, our show that comes out every Thursday now. Right now, we are still going through ACOTAR on our chapter. Oh, we're not? We're done with ACOTAR?
When this episode's up, the whole book would be up. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. All of our ACOTAR chapter chats are now up and separate. So you can just listen to us talk about like different chunks of the chapters. If you weren't reading along with us throughout our first year of the podcast, like it was at the end of every episode, but now we're going to be doing it separately. Mm-hmm. But before we start our like new read alongs, we're making sure that all of our past ones are accessible through our new show, Chapter Chat, our new separate show coming out every Thursday. So we will start ACOMAF. We'll start releasing after ACOTAR is finished this week. And then we will finish ACOMAF and we will start talking about House of Flame and Shadow.
Or so we might put it all up at the same time. We don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. It depends on how it goes. Oh my God. So I am pumped. I'm pumped about that. All right. Time for our Oscars.
Is that the Spanish horn?
It
Spanish turn, it's called.
All right. So the first superlative we're going to give out this year for our top movies of 2023 is the most surprisingly good movie that just like you weren't expecting to be really great and you had a great time. Mm-hmm. What is yours, Natasha?
Okay. I had a very hard time coming up with a list because I feel like I didn't watch a lot of movies this year because of the strike.
How many did you watch? Did you write them down?
I never write them down. I need to get a letterbox because I'm really bad at writing them down.
I write them down as I watch. I watched 28 movies this year, which is probably an all-time low.
Yeah. I think it's because of the strike. But also, are you counting like movies that are old? Or are you talking like new movies?
If I haven't watched them ever, I do put them on the list, but I won't put them in the superlatives because they weren't from the year of 2023.
Okay.
But I did watch 28 movies and like I put 10 Things I Hate About You on it because I'd never seen it before.
Got it.
Yeah.
I don't make a list. And in the last 2 years, I'm like, the last 3 years, I'm like, I need to make a list because I'm not going to do this. Okay. I'm going to download Letterboxd. I put down Puppy Love.
Puppy Love for your most surprisingly good movie.
I really enjoyed it. Okay.
It was cute.
It was cute. It was very cute. It was a cute little rom-com. I did not expect anything from it. It was on Freevee and it came out during strike times. And I told Christine to watch it. And it's with Grant Gustin and Lucy Hale. And I love both of those guys. And they both have dogs that they adopt, and Grant it's like very COVID times. He doesn't like to leave his house. He has anxiety, and Lucy's like the exact opposite, like very like free, like doesn't really care about germs or getting messy or dirty. And her dog like impregnates his dog and they have to become dog parents together.
And dog grandparents.
Dog grandparents. And it's funny and like silly. And it's cute. And I think it's pretty well done, honestly, for how like silly plot is.
It is. Yeah. 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 I could have used some more like relationship moments with them, mm-hmm. but it was really cute. And I had a fun time watching it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels kind of like a Hallmark movie, but like with better acting.
Yeah, it's better than a Hallmark movie.
Yeah,
it's movie,
way better. Like. Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
My most surprisingly good movie was The Honor Society on Paramount Plus. This is starring the kid from Stranger Things with the curly hair. He is in it, and the blonde girl from Spider-Man who does the news is the lead girl.
From Mean Girls?
I haven't seen the new Mean Girls, but yes, I think that's her. And she's great, and it's basically what is it about? It takes place in a high school and they need a recommendation for Harvard, and he only does like one recommendation or something. And there are like four kids in the running, and she is on a mission to make sure she gets it and they do not. And it's such a such a tight script. It's so clever and it's filmed and edited so well. So she breaks the fourth wall. It's very like new age Ferris Bueller, and it's done so well. Like you can do that poorly and they do it masterfully. Mm. I couldn't stop watching. I just turned it on, you know, one day because I needed something to watch while I was like doing something. And then I was like watching. Mm. And then I finished it. I just had a really, surprisingly good time. I was not expecting it to be so good. And then I was like, oh, I want to study how they're breaking the fourth wall here because they're doing such a good job with it. Yeah. So easy watch on Paramount Plus if you need something fun and clever.
I remember seeing that come out. I was like, oh, I should watch that. Yeah. And yeah. The main girl is Angori Rice.
Oh, is that her name? Mm-hmm. Okay. I've never actually heard it. Mm-hmm. Angori Rice. She's great. Yeah. She does a great job.
Yes. All right. Funniest movie.
Funniest movie. All right. Should I go first?
Yes.
All right. So this wasn't like what I thought was going to be my funniest movie, but my funniest movie is No Hard Feelings. And I laughed out of like sheer shock value in the theater. But when I watched it a second time, it was hilarious. Like I was cackling by myself on my like yoga mat as I rewatched it. It was so much funnier after watching it the first time. I think because I was not expecting so much of Jennifer Lawrence's like character to be so fucking wild.
What can you expect from her? I first had this down. I was like, oh, I'll just talk about it with Christine. But I think I need to watch it a second time because I was very shocked the first time watching it.
Yes. Like once you get past the shock value, it's actually funnier than it was the first time. So it actually has a lot of like really great moments that I kind of missed because I was too in my head about like what was happening in the movie.
It's streaming on Netflix and
yes,
like the premise is these parents want someone to date.
The premise is wild.
Yeah, they want someone older to date their boy.
Their 18-year-old son before he goes to college.
Yeah, and that's because he's
not experienced. Yeah. Like when she was talking about how old she was the second time, I found it so funny.
I'm 29. I was 29 last year. What?
Like I was 29 last year. No, she's like, I was 32 last year. Like she's like in her early 30s.
Oh my God.
It was good. Anyway, all right, what was your funniest movie?
I put Anyone But You. With Sydney Sweeney. It was like Sydney's physical comedy in that was so good. I was laughing in the movie theater. Like the first scene when she gets her pants all wet, and then the airplane scene and the butt scene.
Prime.
It was good stuff. And I was cackling.
Yes, those scenes were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just didn't put it on here because I like from like all the way through wasn't as funny as I found No Hard Feelings the second time around. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Anyone But You is a Shakespeare retelling of
what?
It's a Shakespeare retelling of why am I blanking on it?
Of what?
I'm trying to remember. Much Ado About Nothing.
It's a Hate to Love.
Yes, it's a retelling of Much Ado About Nothing, and it's fun.
Tiffany says, please watch Bottoms if you haven't yet. That was so funny. I've been meaning to watch that, and I forgot.
It's
not streaming like anywhere, is it? Because I saw it like to rent on Amazon. Maybe I just need to rent it.
Yeah. Yeah, Nicholas
Flamel. Sorry.
Nicholas Galitzine something. He's Greek. I don't know why I don't remember his last name, but he's in it. From red, white, and royal blue.
Red, white, and royal blue. all right. Let's move on to our next superlative. What was your favorite best non-scripted film? So it could be a documentary or something else. And for me and you, we have the same one. What is it?
Eras Tour.
Taylor Swift Eras Tour concert film.
I am very tempted to rent it and watch it again because there's some people in my life who haven't seen it.
You can't.
Yes.
What?
No, I said yes.
I know. But you can't buy it. You can only rent it, which is frustrating.
That's really annoying. Yeah. Because once you pay $19.89, you really want to own it, not just watch it once. Uh-huh.
But I was like getting tempted after watching other people watch it on their TVs. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is different, being able to pause and rewind mm-hmm. and like look at things more closely. So when it comes out in a way where I can purchase it or watch it like on Netflix, which I don't know if it'll ever do that, I will definitely be rewatching it.
Yeah. I need to own it. Like it hurts me to just rent it and let it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Next. All right.
What's next, Natasha?
Most underrated good movie. Christine, what is yours?
Okay. So I feel like mine's not like underrated on a huge scale.
Makes sense because it's nominated.
It's nominated for an Oscar, but no one's talking about American Fiction in my bubbles at all. Like, I don't think anyone knows about it. Anytime I talk about it, I have to explain everything about it and that it's nominated for an Oscar and they should watch it because it's great. What if, like, has anyone been talking about it to you?
No.
Except me? Yeah, so I feel like it's underrated because no one knows it exists.
What is it about?
It's about a writer, his Jeffrey Wright, and he hasn't been able to sell his most recent book, okay? Oh. And so he's like, all they want are like black people tropes, like cliche books.
Oh.
Yeah, and so as a joke, he puts all these cliches into one book proposal and sends it to his agent like one night while he's drinking, and then that sells. They want to buy it for like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And he hates it and he's like, this is so ridiculous. And but like he keeps leaning in to like it being a joke, and he has like a pen name that he's using for it because he doesn't want to be associated with it. And the more he leans in, the more like all the white people want to buy the book. And it's just, it's very well done. It's such a great script. It's so funny. And, it's a great satire, and it's, you know, oh, great talk. It talks about racism and all that stuff in a really fun, clever way.
Yeah. I gotta watch it.
If you're at all involved in like the publishing or entertainment industry, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. I put, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And I really love this one. This is a Judy Blume book, which was adapted for screen. And I didn't initially like want to watch it at first, but then Christine watched it and she told me how much she loved it. And then I think I watched it on an airplane, or did I watch it at home? I don't remember.
I can't remember either.
And, it was so good. It like,
I'm surprised this isn't nominated for anything,
right?
This was very good.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's generational things that happen. There's a grandma, there's the mom, there's the other side of the parent. There's two different, like types of religions. I think there's like the Christianity and, she marries,
Well, her parents are. So like, yeah, it's takes place like during the 70s. And this was like, I feel like it's not as talked about now, but like back then, and like even when I was growing up, my mom was like, oh my gosh, her, the dad's Jewish and the mom's Christian, what's gonna happen to the kids?
Oh,
like,
yes, yes.
It was such a big deal, and I was like, what? And so she married, her husband's Jewish, and they were like just letting, they wanted to let their kid decide what she wants to be. Like, they're not putting any pressure on her to be anything. Mm-hmm. And it's her dealing with like the outside influence, like outside people in her life talking about that. Yeah. And like, what religion are you? And it's her going through puberty and all of the puberty things in middle school that we never, that we black out. It's, and so, like, this brings them all screaming back.
Yes. There's just so many scenes I'm like, oh God, yes, that happened to me.
It happens to all of us. And it's so fun how universal like that experience is. Like, this again, like, takes place in like the 70s, but it's all still happening with the youths. Like, we all go through it, just in a different age of like technology and shit, but it's the same.
Yeah. And it goes through how Margaret wants to try out different religions, so she goes to all these different churches and experiences all these different people, and it's just so good. And
it's really well done.
Rachel McAdams plays the mom, and she's
great.
The most lovable human. Like, she's so wonderful. And she even tries to fit in because they move from New York City into the suburbs, and like tries to become part of the PTA, and she's, you know, an artist, and it's just so good. She's great.
It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched it yet, like, you gotta watch it. It's mm-hmm. so good. And it's so cozy. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sweating because I'm reliving my puberty, but like, it's nostalgic sort of way.
Yes.
All right. Okay, we're going to move on into our honorable mentions. We both have two. I'm just going to say mine really quickly. Iron Claw is one of my honorable mentions. It was really good, but really sad, like I've said. And Anyone But You, which we've already talked about, is my other honorable mention, which I really enjoyed. I just didn't like think it stuck the landing enough to be on the list.
I agree. I have Red, White, and Royal Blue and Elemental. Red, White, and Royal Blue I watched a few times. There was, I really loved it. I thought there was a few parts of the movie that, like, Anyone But You could have landed a bit better. They could have maybe added some more music to some of the scenes, but
are you talking about Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Yeah.
Okay. You said Anyone But You, so I thought we were going back for a second.
No. I really did enjoy that movie, and I rewatch it quite a bit. I have friends who've rewatched it probably 50 times already.
I have to rewatch it. I've only watched it the one time.
Yeah, you got to rewatch it. The first time I was like, meh. And then
I enjoyed it though, the first time.
No, so did I. And then the second time I was like, and then Elemental was the new Disney animation movie, or was it Pixar? I can't remember.
It was Pixar.
A Pixar movie that came out this year. And I feel like a lot of people didn't give it a lot of love, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very romantic movie. And I love that about it because I am a romance girly at heart and it's really good. So if you haven't watched it yet, you should watch it.
I think I was expecting it to be like more of a romance because I heard all this stuff about it being a romance. And it was cute. I just didn't love it as much as I've loved other Pixar movies. Yeah. But Jazz just said the scene where they didn't have the budget to show the big crowd outside was really funny to me in Red, White, and Royal Blue. And yeah, that scene like hurt me. I was like, you can't have this scene without at least showing a green screen of outside.
That was the stuff about the movie that I think really irked me, is that they didn't have a lot of the like environmental shots, or
they didn't have any establishing shots.
Yeah.
When they went to the museum and they just appeared in the museum, I was like, what are you doing?
Like, why aren't you walking outside? Like,
you have to be outside for a second. Like, you have to get a shot of them outside. There's no secret tunnel to the museum.
Also, like, this is about a royal prince. Like, why aren't we seeing a castle? Like, why? Come on.
Yeah, our palace.
The
palace had to be in it. It was just those sort of things really took me out of it. Yeah. And while I think like the actors were great, the budget, I would have loved to even have like a cheesy looking outside shot, because it just like really felt weird to have no outside shot at all. But I did really enjoy the character elements of Red, White, and Royal Blue. All right. Are we ready to move into our top five movies of 2023? The list. Da na na na. Da na 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 na. All right. We're going to count down. Each of us has our top five movies, and we're going to start at number five. And we don't have them in the doc, so they're surprises for both of us. We haven't seen each other's top fives. Natasha, what is your number five?
My number five is an anime.
An anime?
Yeah.
Which one?
It's Suzume, which came out in April and through Crunchyroll. And I was invited to the premiere, but I loved this film. This was if you guys like Studio Ghibli films, like, this is one for you. Okay. It's by the same filmmaker who made something. Oh God, I can't remember what the first one was. Your name. And Jazz says, and Weathering With You. It wasn't nominated for a Golden Globe. I'm pretty sad about that. I don't know if it was nominated for an Oscar, possibly. I don't think so though. But it's a it's it's it, it it's about the tsunamis in Japan. And so it's kind of taken after that and what creates the tsunamis and like the magical world behind the tsunamis. Specifically, they reference, I think, the one on my birthday, March 11th in 2011. And we follow this girl, Suzume, who is trying to stop a tsunami from happening again. And she has to like run across Japan as she is trying to prevent a big one from happening again. And it's very thrilling. I so enjoyed this movie. And there's a guy in it. And the guy is giving... why am I blanking on the Studio Ghibli films? What's the... Howl. He's giving Howl vibes, okay? Because he kind of just appears. And he knows all the things. But he's not going to tell her. So it's giving Howl vibes. Anyways, really love this film. I want to watch it again, but it was really good. And if I think about, I didn't have a lot of favorite movies this year, so it was very hard for me to come up with this list. But I stand firmly with this Suzume as my number five.
Nice.
Oh yeah, he turned into a chair. Forgot about the fucking chair. That's what he did. Yeah, he turned into a chair. It's pretty cute.
Out of context, this is very like
you just gotta go with it. You know, like I said, Hal turns into a giant bird. The guy in Suzume turns into a chair. So
nice. I mean, we love a chair. Love a good chair. Yeah.
All right, what's your number five?
All right, my number five is Barbie.
What?
And. Yeah, it's Barbie.
Why is it number five?
Because I watched some good movies this year and Barbie's my number five.
Jesus. Okay. I'm like, what the fuck is on your list now?
Barbie was really good. I didn't love it as much as some people loved it. And I think I talked about why in our like tea time about it. It just like didn't feel as nuanced to me because I feel like I've been hearing a lot of the things in it. A lot, but the thing is, it was a really great introduction to like all these feminist ideas that people have never heard before. A lot of people, but like people like us that are in this bubble will. Okay, what is going on over here?
Chloe says, I'm feeling betrayed. Hashtag betrayed by this, by it being number five. And I said, same.
It was Barbie is a nuanced movie. I just mean like the feminist ideas in it just didn't feel as fresh and new the way that they were being said and done, because I've seen it and heard it over and over again in lots of different things over the years and over especially the past 5 years. And this is the first time a lot of people have heard it, but for me, who's been like entrenched in like feminism bubble for a long time, I've heard it a lot of times, so it didn't strike me as like as much as when I heard it the first like 10 times. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So this is like a personal thing for me, but I still think it was a really fantastic film and it had a really amazing script.
Yeah. Mary says, I agree with Christine that the feminist topics were a bit entry level, and I agree. And I mean, I agree with all that, but there are other things within the movie that I loved were.
Yeah.
That made.
Yeah, there were. There were so many great things about the movie. I'm just, this. It's five on my list. I watched 28 films.
We're all mad. It's not number one.
Oh my God.
Also, Laura said, what'd she say? She says, I wish Ken wasn't the main character. Yeah, because he does. He does a lot of, I mean, he was nominated over Margot.
Yeah, but they're like, they're both the main character.
True.
And Barbie is more the main character. He just has more attention on him because we've never seen dudes be portrayed as like silly and frivolous. And dudes are upset about it, you know? So it brings more attention to it.
All right.
We live in a patriarchy.
Number four for me again.
Yes. Number four. Go. Okay. Give us your number four.
Number
sorry.
Four
I was reading.
Is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
That's number four. See, this is what I mean.
different thoughts, but they're great.
Okay. I didn't know where to put this one because I didn't want to put, I put a lot of like big, besides Suzume, everything else is from a big studio. And I was like, mad about it. Okay. So Guardians is number four for me. I fucking love this movie. It was hilarious. Actually, and it didn't go in the most funny because it was on this list. Like it was so well done. It made me fucking sob. I think this movie made me cry harder than Barbie did. I felt way too many things.
It definitely did.
Yes. I felt so many things. It was also such a great, wonderful conclusion to the trilogy of Guardians. Yep. And like, it just felt so warm and good and not in, but also it was hard to watch, but also just so beautiful. I loved it. I don't really know what else to say about it because Christine's probably going to talk more about it and I will add to hers later on.
All right. Okay, my number four was another like surprisingly good movie for me. I was not expecting it at all. And it's Leave the World Behind, the Netflix film.
Okay, I was like, I wanted to put this on the list, but I feel like I don't know why I was getting so in my head about it, but I agree with this.
Yes, it was so good and so thought-provoking. And mm-hmm. It was such a new take on the apocalypse film. Mm-hmm. It, you just see from a different perspective because you're watching from one family and you're very isolated. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we get a very wide view of the apocalypse film. We see from a lot of different perspectives. But this was very much like how you see things when you're cut off from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And as a fan of the fifth wave, like a huge fan of the fifth wave, like this is what I wanted to see in the fifth wave movie, like something like this.
Yes.
And I felt like I was like getting that part of me fulfilled watching this film. So it's with Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke. I love both of those people. It was, Mahershala Ali is fantastic in it too. It perfectly captured this era of like mistrust that really was fostered during like the last 10 years between just people in America because of the divide that was caused by the intense like political shit going on with through 2016 to now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like this new intense, like rageful divide that started to happen.
Yes.
And it captured it in a really visceral way, but very thrilling way that was very, it felt very fresh and new.
I think it really had you examining like internalized racism.
Yeah.
And like seeing it in a way that was very real for people. And I thought the writing was so good. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Like what the fuck is happening? Yeah. And yeah, I wanted to put this on my list. Why did I was so in my head.
Tiffany says, have you read the book, Christine? No, I didn't know the book existed until the movie. And then I have such issues reading the books after the movies. Have you? How was the book?
Also, the Obamas produced this, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Which is also more terrifying because he was a president.
Why is that more terrifying?
Because, what if like this is something that could really happen? You know, it's not just
it is something that could really happen. That's why it was so scary. Yeah. Oh, Tiffany hasn't seen the movie yet. Okay. So if you're one of the people that can read the book before the movie, even though the movie's out, maybe do that and let us know how it compares.
Yes.
Tiffany, I'm really interested in how the book compares to the film. But I was so excited when I saw that the Obamas produced it. It's very... It really reminded me of a Jordan Peele film in like the best way. Mm-hmm. So if you're a fan of Jordan Peele, maybe give this a go too.
if you haven't watched it yet, it's so accessible because it's on Netflix. Anything on Netflix is just so easy to watch. I just get so excited. And Netflix is having more and more films come on there to try to get people back onto Netflix. And it's making me very happy. All right, Natasha, what is your number three?
My number three is Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Oh my God. I don't have that on my list of movies. So I forgot that it existed.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Would it have landed on your list?
Maybe. Oh my God. Yeah, it would have bumped off Barbie.
Oh Lord.
Fuck.
Yeah. So, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes came out this year. I hadn't read the book, so this was all new to me. And like, if we were back in like 2012 when Hunger Games came out, like the Hunger Games would have been on my top five movies of the year. But the fact that we got Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and it was a better version of the Hunger Games, and it was so thrilling, so anxiety inducing. I had no idea what was coming because I didn't read the book. And I think that really added to the experience for me because I was fucking falling in love with President Snow as a young man. I was like, ew, stop it. No, I don't like this. And like it just was shot and it was more, it really showed the worst because
yeah,
it's
it
so
showed
romanticized.
You could feel how terrible it was, yes, the whole time, which you have a hard time feeling through Katniss's eyes, mm-hmm, experiencing the Hunger Games, especially if you haven't read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Melissa says the book was so good and there were so many things that actually translated so well in the film. Yeah. And I know like I missed out on Snow's internalized monologue and how he's doing everything for the betterment of himself because he's a narcissist and he's had to go through so many things at such a young age. And it just, he's like, I had to do this for myself. Because at first you do feel bad for him, but then he starts making all these decisions and it's downhill from there. Yeah. So,
fuck. I cannot believe this wasn't on my fucking list of movies. I this was my number five, Barbie six. But it was so hard to watch, but in the best way. Like you said, it was the Hunger Games shot the way that I wanted to see the Hunger Games shot in the first Hunger Games movie. Mm-hmm. And that again was like fulfilling some hole that's just been there for so long that like the first Hunger Games movie you couldn't see. And yeah, you could see so clearly in Ballad, and it hurt. Mm-hmm. I was so anxious. It hurt so much, but it was so well done. So
it was very well done. And Rachel Zegler like singing and
yes,
like the type of music that was portrayed so beautifully too on screen was something that we really needed to add to the Hunger Games world because like music is so important to Katniss's character and those songs are. And then we have this fantastic singer who's giving us all these amazing performances. Like that when the snakes are crawling, oh God, it's just so good. Like I want to watch it again.
I need to rewatch it. Yeah. Cause I watched the end. Cause you know how I missed the last like hour, when I got a screener. And so I just skipped to the end and watched it, but it's not the same as watching it all together. And I need to watch it, mm-hmm, all together. But yeah, when she sang it, really like you felt it. And when you're reading that part, it does not translate the same.
Yeah. Mira said, I hate reading songs and books. I usually just skim the lyrics. Yeah. I agree.
Like, yeah, especially when they're like new songs and it's not a song that you know. Because yeah, if it's like a song, they're like, this song is on and you can just bring it up in your head, you hear it. But like when it's just a singer who made up new lyrics, like you can't hear it. It's just there and it's hard to like be in the moment with it.
All right.
All right. Okay.
Number three.
My number three is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Oh, shit.
I loved this movie so much. We already talked about it because Natasha had it in her honorable mentions. Was this in your honorable mentions?
It was most underrated good.
Most underrated, yes. I am sad that this didn't get any recognition from any award shows. I feel like it was so good and so well done, and it was such a great adaptation. And it got amazing reviews. It had in the 90s in Rotten Tomatoes. I loved it. I felt so many feelings watching it, and it was so nostalgic. Even though I wasn't alive during this time, I felt so much of it so deeply. The conversation about religion was so well done and hit so hard with me. I just thought everyone did such a good job. And the puberty stuff, like I said, I was getting hot flashes watching it.
I think I didn't relate so much. I related to the religion aspect, but the puberty stuff where she didn't get her period. I didn't relate to that because I was such an early bloomer, so I can see how you, Christine, would relate more to that.
Oh, yeah. So I was the latest bloomer. I didn't ever get boobs. I felt but also I didn't get my period till I was 16. And all of there's so many not even people being purposefully mean, but in middle school, girls start being oh, you're so flat chested. And it's your deepest insecurity and there's nothing you can do about it. And it makes you feel such an ugly shit bag. And I just, there's this character in the movie that said everything mean that people said to me. And I was just so mad at her. But yeah, so it's really good. If you haven't watched it yet, highly recommend. It's all the cringe stuff from our childhoods. Natasha, yeah. We're at number two. Give us your number two of the year. Hit us.
My number two is Barbie.
It's not number one. I'm curious as to if your number one is my number two. Because you haven't mentioned it. Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
Yeah. So, we already talked about Barbie. I mean, it was a cultural.
You can tell us your Barbie.
It was a cultural phenomenon. It was my most anticipated movie of 3 years once I knew it was happening. The thing is, I'm a romance girly at heart. And while I loved watching this movie and I felt so many different things about it, whether it was love or frustration or euphoria over all the outfits. And it was so fun and so well done. There was that aspect missing from it that didn't make it my number one, which is okay. But I mean, it's still probably going to be one of my favorite movies. It's going to be something I'll be so excited to show my nieces and nephews when they grow up, or if I have children on my own. When my mom showed me Clueless and all of these girly movies that made such an impact on, the older generations, my mom growing up, this is going to be one of those movies that I'm okay, I cannot wait for you to watch this one. And that is so fun. It's going to span generations. Is going to be iconic, and we're going to be talking about our favorite Barbie outfits from years on. And I don't know. It's so amazing, and I'm just so happy that we got to live through it too.
Yeah, I think part of why it's not higher for me also is I was so frustrated with the misinterpretation of the film by so many people, and I mean even the people who liked the film sometimes I'll bring up how it's also about how you can't when you're terrible into you're mistreating a group of people, they're obviously gonna
like
revolt,
be upset and revolt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like showing that like feminism is equality at its core, and they have to be better to the Kens and like open up different opportunities for them, just like we need in the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And so many people were like, oh, when I like mentioned that, like, oh, I just thought it was about if girls run the world sort of a thing. And I feel like that perspective spreads so much misinformation with like the people who like wanted to, were like, Barbie's a terrible film. It's mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just about putting down men. And it's just like, that's not what it's about. Yeah, so I got really, it just like became like a really frustrating thing to me whenever I talked to somebody who had that perspective, and I had to like,
yeah, you gotta go in and learn them.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. All right. So your number two is Barbie.
Yeah. What's your number two?
Okay. My number two is Into the Spider-Verse.
The second.
Oh my God, what?
I like,
oh my God.
I know.
This movie was amazing. I know. It was spectacular.
I know.
It's not on your list. No. It wasn't even an honorable mention.
No.
Oh my God.
I love those movies. I love them, but they're not my favorite thing.
Okay. Well, it was my favorite thing. The script was perfection. The character arcs were perfection. Again, this was like such a triumph of like bringing so many different worlds and ideas mm-hmm. together in such a like symphony of excellence. You know, like it was so funny and so heartfelt, and the acting was so, I laughed hysterically, I cried, I like learned things about other Spider-Mans. I was just in awe of like the scene where there's like a Spider-Man headquarters where yep. they're like trying to like fix timelines and shit, and this sequence was so well done and so moving and funny, and I loved it so much. I don't think it's my favorite Spider-Man movie of all time, just because I will always prefer like a live action, mm-hmm. but it's way up there. It's so good. If you haven't watched the Into the Spider-Verse, what's the first one called? Is the first one Into the, this is Across the Spider-Verse, and the first one's Into the Spider-Verse?
I think so.
Okay, it's confusing because the names are so
yeah
similar, but it's phenomenal and so funny. Like the villain in it is so funny. Like I love a villain that has a lot of humor to them but is also terrible. Mm-hmm. Like I just love everything about this, and I didn't get to see it in the theater, so I watched it by myself on the couch, and I was just like the whole time, so giddy and having the best experience. So that's my number two. I can't wait for the third one. So it ends in a way where it's like, there has to be another movie. Yeah. Like it's thrilling.
It was supposed to come out like March of this year, but it got pushed. And they have no date now, which is frustrating for anyone who loves these movies.
I'd hope that it's being pushed just so that they can perfect it and make sure it lives up to the first two films, which were both incredibly brilliant. All right. We're down to our number ones. Mm-hmm. Natasha, I can't even guess yours because I don't know what else is left that we haven't talked about. What is your number one? Hit us. Hey, The Little Mermaid is number one.
The Little Mermaid is number one, baby.
What?
Wild. I fucking love The Little Mermaid. Growing up, Ariel was my favorite princess. As an adult, Belle's my favorite princess. The Little Mermaid was completely overshadowed because it came out in May and then Barbie came out and then everyone forgot about Little Mermaid.
They really
did.
Yeah. And then Hallie dropped off the face of the earth because she got pregnant and she's a mom now. So like, yeah, this was my whole world. I was so excited for the Little Mermaid and the songs. And I like, it was everything for me. But really what took the cake is fucking Eric. The guy who plays Eric and the romance there. It was, I was so giddy watching this film. Not only like, it made me cry when she's saying part of your world, but then Eric gets a whole song and he's just gorgeous and they have such good chemistry. Like, I can't imagine if Harry Styles played Eric. That would have not been good. He would have, like, it would have ruined the whole vibe of the movie. Yeah, no, I love this movie. As soon as I walked out of that, I was like, that's my number one movie. Like, I'm going to watch this all the time. This is the most rewatchable new film for me next to Pride and Prejudice. The only thing that sucked about this film was the wardrobe. We only had like three dresses or two dresses and she didn't get to wear her sparkly gown, which still bugs me. Yeah. The other part I didn't love about it was Melissa McCarthy's Ursula. I thought she did a great job, but I didn't really feel like she had her own take on the character aside from like a few little like comedy bits that were definitely like Melissa McCarthy that made me laugh. Yeah. Little Mermaid's my favorite. I loved it so much.
I did cry a million times watching that movie, like nonsensically. I'm just like, I don't even know.
It's just hitting me in a weird way because I watched this as a child.
Yeah, it's so nostalgic. And I just think Hallie did such a wonderful job. Like, we haven't really had a princess who is a singer. And what she did for little girls everywhere was like history making.
Really important.
Really yeah. important. And like we haven't had a singer as a princess. And she was just so great at acting too. And we got these beautiful songs that I think are even better renditions of the originals. Aside from the
Lin-Manuel Miranda one.
Well, that one. But yeah, the Under the Sea. The underwater stuff wasn't great. And I knew that was probably going to be it because it's hard to do underwater stuff. But everything on land was incredible.
I definitely enjoyed it. It just wasn't like a favorite for me. Mm-hmm. But I had fun watching it for sure. All right. My number one movie of 2023 is Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I loved it so much and felt so much watching that movie. It was a spectacular sequel to a phenomenal trilogy full of like wonderful, lovable characters, amazing comedy, so much feeling. Like, we sobbed hysterically watching that. And then I laughed hysterically. Like, I was just in constant hysterics, one way or another. And I loved the writing. I loved all the character interactions. Like, it was just so good. And it was after such a stretch of like mediocre Marvel films, and they really just knocked it out of the park. And when like the dog days are over started playing, like it'd been the perfect amount of time since I've heard that song. I was just like, so good. The tears. I literally was wearing a mask and it was just like soaking wet. And Tasha was like, ew, take that off. It was like tears and snot because I didn't have any tissue. So it was just like gathering on the mask. It was disgusting. But I still haven't rewatched it. I am really excited to do it. I have to watch it again.
Yeah, I need to watch it again. But it's also, it hurts.
But it
heard so good.
I have to skip through all the rocket bits. Those are the hurtful parts. I don't very like hard. Those.
I know.
Well, Disney gets our number one spots.
Marvel. I feel like this one is Marvel.
Well, Disney owns Marvel.
I know, but they own everything, so you can't give them all the credit. They just like bought everything.
But yeah, I feel like in a world of a lot of like mediocre movies, there were some really great standouts.
Mm-hmm. Funny how Oppenheimer didn't make any of these lists.
It was in no world was it ever going to make my list.
I asked Alex last night, I'm like, what's your favorite movie of the year? He's like, Oppenheimer. I'm like,
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, we're going to move into Mary Kissclive.
Oh, I forgot I did this. Okay. So, this is the battle of the hair.
All right.
We have Mary Kissclive, your natural hair, a blowout, or a hair in a bun, or an updo or of some sort. What are you going to marry? What are you going to kiss? What are you going to cliff?
All right. I am going to marry blowout. I knew you didn't. Because I cannot. My natural hair being just drying is fucking, it just looks bad. It just looks like unkept.
So that means you have to blow out your hair for the rest of your life.
No, someone else blows it out for me. That's what a blowout is.
No. You do it yourself or you can get it blown out.
Yeah. Okay. I do already do that.
I know. So that's true.
I have to do that. And then natural hair, I guess, is going to be like kiss, and then cliff hair in a bun, even though I have to do all of these things.
Wow.
You didn't. I got my hair blown out. I wear it in a bun all the time. What are you talking about?
Oh, you do, I guess.
But this is, I got my hair blown out at Olivia's Bachelorette, and like the girl who was organizing it, she, you know, asked us if we wanted blowouts because she was making the appointments, and she was like, blowouts are usually like $65, and we're like, okay, cool. I wanted a blowout. So I get the blowout, we get to pay, and $85
what?
They charged me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they charged her $80. And they charged the girls who went before us $95 and $85. It was like they were just pulling numbers out of their ass based on like how long everyone's hair was.
Oh my God.
And then I had to tip, and like it ended up being over $100 for my blowout. What the fuck? Yep.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry for that. I am going to marry my natural hair. That's what I'm sporting right now. Because I have been able to learn and maintain the beast. and I like it curly. I'm going to cliff a blowout because I rarely blow dry my hair anyways. And when I do, I don't feel like it lasts as long. And then I'm going to kiss my hair in a bun. As Chloe says, I love my buns, and I do. I love putting my hair up in different assortments and ways. And I get too hot to have my hair down most of the time. So it's typically almost always up unless it's cold outside or unless I'm going to an event.
Yeah. I get too annoyed with it, like in my face. So I've always got it in like a messy bun when I'm home. It's only down when I'm like looking at people.
I know. I'm like, it's down right now because it needs to dry. It's still wet.
It's down right now because we're on camera. And I had a blowout that was $100. So I had to get use out of it. I got to get 10 days out of this blowout.
Chloe says, me personally, I think Natasha has the prettiest hair I've ever seen. Well, thank you.
Aww.
Half of it is not mine. I have extensions, but I take care of it as if it's my own.
Ah.
See, my instinct is to take this as an insult against my hair, but I'm trying to.
Oh my gosh, Christine! We all know you have the most gorgeous natural hair. I love your hair.
I know, but this is like I hate this competitive thing in me. We were talking about it this weekend about like how like our dad just was like, you have to be the best at everything. Oh, Lord. When I'm not the best, there's this part of me that's like, how do I make it better? How do I change it? Oh my god, no. You have beautiful hair. I don't just
it's because I can I think people like that I change up my hair so often. I think that's why. Like it looks
no, Natasha's like really good at hair.
And I can't for the life of me get good at hair.
That's because you already have great hair. You don't need to work too much at it.
Well, no, but if I try to do anything with it, like I'm just not good at it. It's just not one of my strengths. Mm-hmm. Like
when I try hard, it ends up still being like, okay. Natasha, help.
Must do a braid.
All like right. I remember in Forks, I was like, my hair was such a mess. And you were just like, let me do it. And like you took like 10 minutes and it looked so good. And I was like, how?
What happened to your hair? I don't remember. How did I fix it?
You like curled it. My hair was just like blurping. It was like and you curled it for like 10 minutes. And I was like, how did you make it look this good in 10 minutes? It was like magic.
A wizard that I am.
Yeah, hair wizard. Mm-hmm. All right. That is going to be our episode today, y'all. We will be back with the worst movies of 2023 next week. Our podcast is edited by Alex Polis and Jake Needham. If you don't already, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast app for free. If you like the visual version, make sure you subscribe on YouTube for free so you never miss an episode. You can follow us on Instagram at Those Forking Fangirls, on TikTok at Those Forking Fangirls, on X Twitter is Fork Fangirls Pod. I don't know who else is still using that, but like we do have it. Instagram is probably where we're the most active. All the links are in our show notes. Thank you so much for listening. We release episodes every Friday of our main show and every Thursday of Chapter Chat. I'm Christine.
I'm Natasha.
I'll see you next time. Bye, everybody. Bye.